Welcome, everyone, to the Top Producer Podcast. This is Paul Niefer, your host. And today we're going to have a conversation with Greg Vincent, who is part of the Ag Spectrum Company. So, Greg, how are things going?
Great, Paul. Long time since we've talked, but good to hear from you again. And thanks for having me on here.
Yeah, I think we were reminiscing that probably the last time we ran into each other in person was at a Kevin Van Trump seminar in Kansas City, probably 6, 7, 8 years ago, something like that.
Yeah, it's been a while. It just means I'm getting old, I think.
Well, you're not as old as me, Greg. So, that also means you were actually with Farm Journal right when I sort of came on as a columnist and so on. So I worked with you for about a year or so, it's good to get caught up again.
Yeah, I kind of lost touch with some of you guys that we worked together, but fond memories of my time at Top Producer and AgWeb for sure.
Yeah. So as I always do on these podcasts, let's start with your background. So, where you grew up, I think you're still based north of Kansas City, but where you grew up, college, all that good stuff. So let's start with that.
Yeah, well, started out my life in Carlisle, Iowa, which is just southeast of Des Moines, about 10 miles. And we just had a small farm there. My dad was actually a writer for Successful Farming at the time. So I've kind of been exposed to all worlds of the ag media side but very active in agriculture through our both parents come from legacy family farms in southeast Iowa. And that's really where my interest grew from that. And then I went to Iowa State University and got my 4-year degree in 5 years, I say, in ag journalism. I was one of the last few people to get a degree in ag journalism at Iowa State. They've since transitioned that program into an ag communication side, but kind of a bittersweet thing to see that go. But nice that I was able to be one of the N1s and actually got the same degree from Iowa State that my dad did. And that's Iowa State still a big part of my life. And very much something that occupies my time from the athletic standpoint. But now I live in Smithville, Missouri, which is on the north side of Kansas City. As you said, it's about 10 minutes east of the airport for people who know the area. And my wife and I work with Ag Spectrum now, and Casey is working for the American Royal, so still very involved in agriculture there. And we have 3 daughters. One's grown out of college, one's just getting ready to go to college, and then one's a junior in high school. So definitely keep very busy with that.
So with 3 daughters, you and their ages, you're almost not. You're sort of going out of the phase of being the stupidest person on the face of the earth to actually having some knowledge. Is that right or not?
Well, it depends on the day. maybe the minute. But yeah, it's definitely a transition. I my oldest daughter's to the point now where she did ask me to drive by yesterday and inspect a house that they're considering buying. She's getting married in October and looking at buying their first house. So apparently there's a little bit of comfort there still with having me involved in some of those things. We'll see how long that lasts though.
Yeah, I had 4 boys. And like I say, it just depends on the time of day, whether you're the dumbest person or actually you got some wisdom. So,
and a lot of it's justified too.
Yeah, exactly. So, well, let's talk a little bit about Ag Spectrum as far as what is the company and what does it do and what's your role with the company and how it helps farmers. And let's just go through all that process.
All right. Well, Ag Spectrum is, we've been in business. This will be our 41st season that we're in this year. So we've been around quite a while, but it's kind of a quiet growth company. We're not real big. My role is the district sales manager for Kansas, Missouri, and Nebraska. And then I kind of dabble in other areas as I can. I'm helping out a little bit in Iowa right now and maybe involved in a few other states as I can, because we are growing And we tend to grow where we have customers and we have dealers that can service them. So, sort of a quiet company in that way. And took a little bit of getting used to coming from a company like Farm Journal to that everybody's heard of, to a company that a lot of people, quite frankly, haven't heard of. And part of that's by design, because what we do is we take a full system approach to crop production. We make our money by selling fertilizer products, but a lot of the things that you're hearing right now, we've been doing for 40 years. I mean, a lot of the biological things that are out there, you hear a lot more about split applications of nitrogen. That is something that we've been a proponent of since the day we started. We're actually helping farmers develop nitrogen programs based on the hybrid that they're going to use, because we know that corn hybrids will react differently to nitrogen based on what type of hybrid it is, and then time of the year they're going to react differently. So we're taking a look at all those things and putting that into a fertility and management program to help farmers really adapt some of the things that you hear a lot about in the media right now. But quite honestly, we talk to a lot of guys that when we go in and see them, we start explaining what we do. They say, you know, I've been looking for something like this. I just haven't known where to go, because there's just a lot of information out there. And I kind of like to say that farmers are drowning in information, but thirsting for knowledge. And we're trying to bring some knowledge to that. And it's all based on what we refer to as basic science. And basic sciences are understanding how and why things work. And it isn't necessarily about selling an individual product, because I've had a lot of experience of product promotion through my time in the marketing side, and then with what I was doing in the media world, is we tend to talk about a lot of new products that are out there. But what we lose sight of sometimes is that that one product may have 5 bushels advantage in a test, but you don't know anything else that went into that, and that doesn't mean it's going to work on your place when you try to add it in.
Is the footprint of Ag Spectrum, is it primarily a corn belt, or does it do other crops too? I'm just curious on that.
Yeah, right now we're working in 27 states. And when I talk about basic science, though, so if you look specifically at corn, and we focus a lot on corn because we are a Midwest-based company. We're based just north of the Quad Cities in Iowa, is where our headquarters is, but we do cover business in 27 states. I'm actually on my way to Montana next week. But a green crop is a green growing crop, and nutritional requirements are the same. A pecan tree is going to have the same nutritional requirements for its reproductive stage that a corn plant will. It'd be different based on the crop that you have.
What are the trends that you've seen maybe over the last 10 years as far as is the application of nitrogen at different times during the growing season? Is that becoming a lot more prevalent, or is it still, hey, I'm just going to apply it in the fall or apply it in the spring and once and be done with it? I'm just curious. I know within your company, certainly it's changed, but what are you seeing out there in the sort of just the global corn growing market?
Well, we're certainly seeing a lot more interest in that, because that is talked about a lot in the market now. When you're looking at, and this is something that made me reach out to you the other day, was listening to your interview with Mitchell Hoare on the carbon intensity program. And your carbon intensity score is going to be affected by how you apply nitrogen. And one of the things that's going to improve your CI score, for example, is a split application of nitrogen, and not applying it all at once. So we are seeing a lot more interest in it from that standpoint. But also farmers do see that it makes sense. The challenge is implementation of that, because the best time, quite honestly, to apply anhydrous is at a side dress, in a true side dress, when corn's about V6 to V8 would be when you should be applying that. So the corn plant can utilize that ammonia nitrogen during the reproductive stage. Now, where I'm sitting here in Northwest Missouri, there's a lot of farmers that look at me like I'm crazy when I suggest that the best option to do is to apply side-dress ammonia, because there is no way they can pull an anhydrous bar through some of these terraced hills here. So it's going to depend on where you are.
Yeah.
And then we work with them on what's the next best option.
And for them, what would be maybe a case of the next best option?
Well, it depends on their soils. So we start by looking at their soils and getting into what, primarily looking at the CECs and the organic matters at that point. If we're lighter soils, we will try to probably look at a wide drop application if that's possible. Again, in the hills, that gets to be a little bit difficult, but maybe another way if they have the ability to fertigate. If they're heavier soils, then we may move that ammonia application to spring, to a pre-plant application. Urea is always an option later on, because that's going to be a step away from an ammonia. But then there's some challenges with that if you don't get rain. So it depends on your overall farm. Now, the one thing that we don't want to get away from is early nitrogen, and it's providing nitrate nitrogen to a corn plant, because that is going to do, after your corn plant determines its kernel rows around, which is based on phosphorus. And that's something that we focus on first, is getting the phosphorus, our starter in furrow, so the corn plant can set the kernel rows around, and then your kernel length or your ear length is determined about V5 to V8, and that's based on nitrate nitrogen. Okay. So it's taking a look at this overall, the requirements that the plant's going to need through the growing season, and feeding it those things at the time, and then whatever the application method is best to get it there so the plant can utilize it.
And is there a direct correlation between, you know, ears around, or kernels around, I should say, kernels around? So if you got 22 kernels around versus 14 kernels around, is there a direct correlation to yield? Or, because I know sometimes, you know, less kernels around, you're going to have bigger kernels versus smaller mm-hmm. kernels. I'm just curious as to what the direct correlation on yield might be.
Well, that would be the question then, is what's your system involve? So to take a step back, when I talk to a lot of new farmers looking at our system, one of the first things I often hear is, well, I've used starter before and it doesn't work. And I say, generally, I agree with you that a lot of starters do not work, because a lot of starters are not available. And the reason you use a starter, we tend to refer to those universally as pop-ups or starters. And that just, you know, we think, okay, well, we're going to try and push that corn out of the ground faster and get it growing. Well, that's an important part of what we're doing. But what we're really doing, and the reason you should use a starter, is for the phosphorus and the load that can get into the plant early on. Because at V3, the kernel rows around are determined by the amount of phosphorus that's in the leaf tissue at V3. Okay. That is a study that's been around for years. It holds true today. And if you are using a starter that is not available to the plant, and that's where we talk about what we do, is ours is cooked into a nutrient form. It stays available because it's lower pH. So it's not going to tie up with calcium, because phosphorus and calcium tie up, because that's how you get the phosphorus, is separating it from calcium that we spread dry on a field. So that is separated from calcium. So if you're applying it to a soil that is 75 to 80% calcium on the cations, it's going to tie up. So you need to have something that's going to have that phosphorus available. So yes, it does tie back then to yield potential, because now are we doing something to pay off the work we've done with the starter by adding length to the ear. And then Mother Nature is always the number one factor that we have to deal with. And so are we going to have weather where you allow those kernels to fill? And then that's where we step in and we take a look at a foliar feeding program, because plants will naturally, when it gets to a reproductive stage, so, and I'm talking a lot about corn, but it's pretty much the same with any crop, but there was actually a study done at Purdue University that studied the miles of a root system in an acre of corn. And about a 30, I think it was a 32, 33,000 population field on 30-inch rows that had that tops out about 38,000 miles of root system in an acre of corn. But that tops out about the tassel stage for corn. From there, the root system starts to shrink because all the energy of that plant is going into developing an ear at that point. It's doing what it wants to do. It's trying to stay alive and feed that ear. Well, what we do then is we come in at that time and we actually feed foliar feed a crop and force it to grow roots. Trick it into growing roots. So it's actually able to grow roots, acquire moisture, acquire nutrition from the soils, as well as feeding it the nutrients that it needs right then. But what we're really doing is affecting that root growth so it can bring in nutrients through grain fill.
So you can
And that's,
maximize that grain fill for that ear of corn.
yeah. So it's important, I think the point of all that, Paul, to go back to your original question is it's important to look at the entire process of what you're doing on your farm and how you're growing that crop because something may impact things negatively. We see a lot of herbicide damage that we tend to think about. We want to kill weeds, right? But what you need to think about is, all right, if you kill a weed with herbicides, is that doing something detrimental to the crop? Because all herbicides, it doesn't matter what it is, will limit your yield potential. Now, that may sound kind of crazy, but you have to think about those things. So a plant has to metabolize the herbicide, whatever plant you're doing. It may not kill it, but it has to metabolize it. So how well does it metabolize it at the time? And if you spray it at the wrong time, when the plant is wanting to form that ear at V3 to V8, if you're spraying it at that wrong time and you're prohibiting the plant from focusing on what it wants to because you've made it sick, you need to watch all those things. So it's hard to say that, this one thing I did added yield because that's not true. Everything that you did preserved the yield that you did that you saved from when you planted that seed. I
So
hope
like you
that makes
say,
sense.
it does make sense. So it is a, it isn't just one thing, it's a multiple of things that you do to that plant in order to maximize the yield. And again, subject to Mother Nature.
Right. And that's, I tell people when I worked at Farm Journal or when I was at Dealer and Applicator, which is now Scoop, and that was a different company at the time, but Farm Journal now owns that company. But I would get a call nearly every day from a company saying, hey, we've got this product coming out and it shows a 10 bushel yield advantage over our competition. And so maybe that was a herbicide. I said, okay, well, that's great. I said, so you got 10 bushel. Yesterday, I got a call from somebody with a fungicide and they say they've got a 10 bushel yield advantage over their competition. Tomorrow, I'm probably going to get a call from somebody, let's say it's an insecticide. And they've got a 10 bushel yield advantage. Can any of you tell me if I use these three products together that I'm going to get 30 bushels?
And
And
now,
it's like,
likely you're
well,
still going to get 10, right?
well, but it, that 10 may be, it's going to depend on your soil types, your soil condition. Did you plant deep enough? Is your planting depth too shallow? If there's a big difference between 2 inches and an inch and a quarter, where you're more susceptible to herbicide damage at an inch and a quarter planting depth, and maybe you thought you had it at 2 inches, and we see this a lot where people think they have their planting depth at 2 inches, but it's really an inch and a quarter. Well, and then we can go back and we can look then in mid-July and we can say, you've got some herbicide damage here because you were too shallow. So it's all these factors that, with the promotional stuff, we want to talk about the yield because that's important to a farmer. Cost and yield of the cost of the program, cost of the product, and then the yield potential are all important. I mean, that's how we live, right? But trying to look at this at each individual piece and say that's the difference is next to impossible. So you've got to do everything you can to understand how the plant grows and how it develops, and then manage around that. And sometimes that isn't the most convenient thing for a farmer from a personal standpoint, but it's the right thing to do because it sure is convenient to cash more checks than it is to worry about how you're going to make the payment next year on the farm.
Are, the newer high speed planters that, that have been touted, are they still doing a pretty good job of maintaining that depth that you need, or is reducing the speed still better? Or I'm just curious, and you may not know the answer to that, but I was just curious on that.
My experience is it's anecdotal. I'm talking to farmers, and I would say the majority of the farmers that we work with are using the high-speed planters, but they're still keeping it 5 to 6 miles an hour because mentally they just have a hard time grasping that, and I understand it. The technology is great, but they're still not willing to do it. But then I've talked to several people that even when they're pulling a nitrogen tank behind the planter and using our starter, several people are going 9 to 10 miles an hour, and they don't see a difference. But so it's kind of all over the board. It's really going to dependent on the farmer that you talk to. The big challenge we see right now is managing down pressure and creating sidewall compaction, because if we're trying to add all these things to the planter with adding nitrogen in a band beside the row, you want to get it into soil moisture. So we increase If you increase your down pressure to get it into soil moisture, especially when we've been in dry conditions like we are in the Western Corn Belt right now, you gotta go a little deeper. Well, you need to look at what you're doing potentially from a sidewall compaction standpoint then. And that limits your opportunity for roots to grow out and get moisture, get nutrients, and so it's just again, it's keeping those things in mind. It's a simple thing, but it's like I say, it's like golf. It's simple, but it's not easy.
Well, and it's a balancing act. I mean, you have to understand that what you do over on one side is going to affect potentially the plant over on the other side. So
Absolutely.
it isn't a and it's not a zero sum game. If you
Right.
can maximize those benefits, you're going to get it. And again, assuming Mother Nature cooperates. So just like my corn in Missouri last year, I had a great crop coming, and then a 100 mile an hour wind hit for I think what was it, 7 minutes in a row or something. So that doesn't do a corn crop very good.
No, it does not.
Well, Greg, we're going to go ahead and take a break for a sponsor message, and then we'll come back and have a little bit further discussion.
How many years away is the long run for a farmer? 5 years? 10 years? Top producers like Hans Reinschi of Blue Diamond Farming Company in Jessup, Iowa, know RoboAgri Finance shares his enduring vision for the future.
Whether it's building our grain site, or if it's purchasing the next field, we're able to turn to Rabo as a trusted partner to help us get financing to make those generational decisions.
With unmatched financial capacity, local relationship managers, and a global network of sector experts to offer market guidance, RoboAgri Finance provides enterprising farmers with a personalized approach to lending and financial services. Growing a better world together, RoboAgri Finance.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Top Producer Podcast. I am Paul Neef, your host, and we're going to rejoin our conversation with Greg Vincent from Ag Spectrum. So I guess I'll ask some personal questions. I got my key questions, but I'm going to ask a few other personal questions first. So as a sales manager for, you said, Kansas, Missouri, and Nebraska, I guess a question for maybe the audience out there for you is, how many days are you on the road, or are you able to do a lot of that from maybe your home office?
I spend, I would say, over all of the year, I spend about half and half on the road, half in the home office. Right now, sitting here on April 17th, or excuse me, April 18th, it's pretty easy for me to be in the home office, because I always joke that farmers don't want to see me anyway, but they really don't want to see me right now because they're busy.
Yeah.
My busy time is from a sales standpoint, my busy time is obviously from harvest through planting. So I'm on the road a lot during the winter. In the summer, one thing that we do that makes us a little different is that we do get out in the field with our growers, and we're out inspecting. We say it's inspect what we expect. And we go out and we walk the fields with farmers. Ag Spectrum was started by six guys, 41 years ago now. Five of them are still active, and they own and operate the company still. Two of them are very active about getting in the field with us, and they like to come out and visit with our customers one-on-one. Because what we find is what we just talked about is everything that goes into that crop. It's all about implementation. So we could hand people a book and all the products that we sell and then the products that we don't sell and say, go make it happen. Well, we want to be out there making sure that they understand what needs to happen to make it happen right. And we're working with them and helping them make adjustments on the go. And we're looking at that planting depth. We don't sell the equipment, but we're looking at the planting depth. We're looking at sidewall compaction, because that's all going to go into how successful they are, which ultimately means how successful we're going to be. So we want to do everything we can to make sure that what happened this spring was done right. If it wasn't quite done right, sometimes we tell farmers things they don't necessarily want to hear. But that's part of what we feel that we owe that to them. If they're going to buy from us and be our customers, it's something we owe them. And it's, we definitely try to treat it like a partnership.
Well, and, you know, you had mentioned before the break, the words, you know, a CI score, carbon intensity. Are you starting to work with farmers to help them maximize that CI score, or is that still maybe down the road a little bit?
Well, I think it's down the road a little bit for us. I mean, and it's extremely limited, Paul. So probably even saying CI score, I have outkicked my coverage on what I really know about that program right now, because I'm trying to learn it. But what I've seen from what we impact and what we do is we're already doing those things. We've been doing them for 40 years. We never set out to be a green company or a sustainable company, because that really doesn't mean much. I mean, sustainability doesn't mean anything without profitability.
Yep.
I tell people the only thing that farmers get paid from a sustainability standpoint, when all these big corporations are talking about sustainable production and sourcing sustainable grains, is the only thing they're paid is lip service, because they're really not getting paid for these things yet. And that's the one thing that excites me about this carbon intensity score, is that I think there is an opportunity there for farmers to make money. And when we look at the people that we work with, that we've been working with for the 41 years that we've been in business, they can benefit from this now in more ways than just having better production and really making soil health more than a buzzword. So it is something we're looking at, but you know, it's the right thing to do from a crop production standpoint that can help a farmer's profitability on the production side. The CI score now that we're looking at could be a very much a potential extra thing for our guys that are doing it the way we talk to them.
Yeah. And again, I think, you know, we got to have guidance from the IRS. We got to have, you know, how long is, you know, these credits going to be in place? Is there going to be a mandate for SAF at some point? A lot of moving balls that nobody knows how they're being juggled right now.
Yeah. And very early in my career, I talked to a farmer once who said, I don't want to hear anything about premiums or this money, because today's premium is going to be tomorrow's discount for me.
And so
that's something we have to overcome, because I think farmers have been the most overpromised and underdelivered audience that's ever been out there before, because you know, I've been part of it when I worked for marketing agencies before, that it just gets, you know, it gets exciting when we talk about new things, but it doesn't always mean it's the right thing to do.
Can we deliver, you know, can we deliver on the promise? That's the question right now. And we'll certainly have more podcasts on that as we get more and more details. So let's go ahead.
And I'm not being negative about it, Paul. I'm just saying, I think this is how I'm trying to approach it from what we do. I think there's a huge opportunity. There's a lot of questions we need to get figured out. But in the meantime, I think we can make sense of the things that go into that carbon intensity score from what we're seeing right now, because it does make sense from a production standpoint.
Okay. Well, I always like to ask a few questions. So I, you know, in this process, either at Ag Spectrum or your other parts of your career, have you had any mentors along the way?
Hopefully everybody I meet can be a mentor of one kind or another. I mean, maybe you've got some negative influences from times that you learn from people. So I try to learn from everybody. Obviously my dad would be my number one, mentor. We lost him 3 years ago this summer, but it was interesting, obviously, growing up with him. And then as I got into the same business, we became competitors, colleagues. But he was always a mentor to me. The other one from a professional standpoint that I would say would be Doug Cooper, who used to be the host of the Big Show on WHO out of Des Moines. Doug was my boss in Ames when I was in school working for Iowa State Extension and doing farm markets on the radio there. So those two, then my older brother, and then just a number of people that I've worked with over the years. And I don't want to start naming names because I'll probably offend somebody and leave some out. But
that's like on the Academy Awards, you know, they'll start naming names. And then if I forgot somebody, forgive me, you know, that type of thing. So,
you know, working with people like you too over the years, Paul, when you wrote the column for us, I certainly learned a lot of the business ideas and business perspective from people like you working with you. So, like I said, it's a number of people that I've tried to learn from whenever I meet them. I think everybody's got something to offer.
Well, you have a full-time job, you have three grown daughters. Do you have time for any hobbies?
Oh, I make time for hobbies. I'm a recovering competitive barbecuer. We don't do many competitions anymore, but for about 6 or 7 years, that was a great family activity. We did do that, but I still do a lot of barbecuing on the weekends, and a lot of people around town will ask me to do barbecue for them. So that's a fun thing that I was able to do that kept me at home, at least when I was traveling a lot. But golf consumes me now. And then just in the last 5 or 6 years, I've certainly not big stakes, but I do enjoy playing poker with my friends, and we just play $20 games. It's not a major thing, but it's a fun activity.
Well, speaking of golf, I actually ordered new clubs. They showed up earlier this week. I haven't had a chance to go out and hit them because I've been on the road, and then I'm going to go play golf this afternoon. So we'll see how
that
goes.
Can you say what you got for clubs?
Well, I got TaylorMade Q10 driver and 3-wood. I got Mizuno Hot Metal 792s, I think, for the irons. And then Callaway wedges. So, you know, supposedly they're supposed to help my game, but we'll see. We'll see.
Sure.
So
good for you. Enjoy them.
I will.
When you come to Kansas City next time.
I need to do that. I definitely need to do that. So is there anything that keeps you up at night?
Well, kids.
yes.
And wondering what they're doing. No. You know, I think one thing that I do enjoy about this job is we're focused on the right things from what we're trying to do with to help farmers. I think it's a unique job. I've actually told our owners this is the strangest company I've ever worked for, because I do not know what my sales goal is. I'm sure somebody has a goal for me somewhere. I have my own goals, but the attitude that we have, and it's one of the nice things about being owned by five individuals, they're not concerned about making Wall Street numbers. They're not concerned about making some fictitious sales goal. Their attitude is, if you are doing the right thing and you're trying to help people adopt the system and not trying to just sell them a product and trying to trick them into doing something that maybe they're not ready to do, then you're doing it right. And that is where their focus is. And so it's kind of a nice way to live a life, I think.
Yeah, yeah, totally agree. And then finally, what's your definition of success in farming?
Are you going to be in business next year? I think, but, you know, I mentioned it before, you know, everybody talks about sustainability. I think success will be is if you're doing the right thing from a production standpoint, you're improving production. And, you know, it sounds, I hesitate to say it because you know, the glamorous life of farming. I think there's a lot of challenges with farming, but, you know, I think everybody that does this and that is successful at farming can be doing a lot of other things, probably being very successful in other pursuits, but they do it because there is that lifestyle. And I think having that balance of understanding that we do have this creation out here that we're trying to take care of and make better for future generations. And you know, it's not about just how many acres can we cover in a day. It's, are we doing the right thing to make the most of what we've got available?
Yeah, no, totally agree. Anything else you'd like to add before we sign off?
No, it's good to hear from you, Paul. And we need to definitely stay in touch more. And I appreciate the opportunity to talk.
No, it's great. Great having you on the podcast. Again, this is the Top Producer Podcast, and this is Paul Neifer, your host, signing off.